Welcome again to the latest episode of Challenge Accepted podcast here at Arctic Wolf. My name is Ian McShane. I'm the VP of Strategy here. And as always, I'm delighted to be joined by Adam Murray. Adam, how's it going, man?
It's going well. How's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, I find myself in a really privileged position again this week, right? I've had jobs and projects and tasks where, you know, you just grind things out because, you got to get them done. But for like the fourth time in a row with this podcast, it's a topic that's really, really caught my interest because we're going to be talking about malware, malware analysis, and CTI, right? Cyber threat intel. Now, a couple of months ago, the nerd part of my brain back at the start of September was kind of itching for something nerdy to do. So I actually started to go through a self-led malware analysis course. Now, I guess I'm not completely new to it, but let's say it'd been a while. So it was a lot of fun to get back into building a lab and observing malware behaviors and really thinking about how you would build detections or how you could hunt for that kind of activity, because I kind of feel that a lot of that work is abstracted away really well so that, you know, people don't really realize the effort, the skill and the expertise that goes into detections and preventions, right?
Yeah. So, I remember my intro to this obviously was when I was in the FBI as a special agent doing investigations, and we would have to figure out, you know, what was going on whatever machine or drive we were looking at. And, you know, I learned just enough probably to be dangerous, you know, looking through memory and other things to try to reverse engineer some malware, figure out what's going on. There's actually a position in the FBI that maybe not too many people know about with the title of computer scientist. And there's two or three or four of these computer scientists on each cyber squad. And one of their main jobs, among other things, is to help reverse engineer malware. And they're also doing a thing in the FBI now where they have specific field offices that are an expert in a certain type or strain of malware. And so a lot of it's trying to, you know, figure out what it is, what it's related to, and then we can get the experts in that particular piece of malware and have them reverse engineer it. But yeah, I remember, you know, my bumbling attempts to try to figure out what kind of malware this was, and, you know, searching through memory and all that kind of stuff. So I'm really excited about this too.
Well, today, delighted to be joined by Anthony Akut, who's joined us. He's one of our senior threat researchers, and he actually came in through an acquisition we did of a company called VX Intel. And this is really interesting just because of not only the company that we acquired, but also I'm stoked to talk about Anthony's background. So Anthony, welcome to the podcast.
Nice to be on board. Thank you, Ian.
How about you give us a real quick kind of background about you and maybe how you got into cybersecurity?
Yeah, sure. So growing up in Turkey in the 80s, sort of late 80s, the brain virus came out, which immediately sparked my attention into how can things be used subvertively, so to speak, mm-hmm. to do things that, you know, systems are not supposed to do. And literally, when the news of the brain virus came out, I had to have it, look at it. I mean, I didn't understand too much of it at the point, but, you know, playing around with it. And then, of course, the 90s came with all the big break in viruses, polymorphic viruses. I was like, yeah, that's it. I was told I had to sort of collect them, analyze them, put it like in a little zoo and admire them, basically. Sort of growing up with that, with my, you know, Commodore 64 and, you know, all sort of like old so home computers, I just sort of fell into it. So my first job was like a computer programmer job at a pump manufacturer in the south of England, and I used to sort of like, I was in the evening shift, so, you know, by day I was like a programmer, you know, systems analyst, and in the evening I used to sort of check their bulletin board, see what new viruses were coming out so I can add it to my collection. And it just grew and grew from there, really. There's no stopping to it.
That's really interesting. So you talk about collecting. How big is your collection today?
Well, I think it's approaching almost a billion samples, you know, with all the old stuff from the late 80s, all the different things, all the polymorphic stuff. I would guess conservatively for 850 million unique samples.
Wow.
So that kind of begs the question, how do you store all of this? Like where is it all kept?
Well, until VX Intel started, it was just kept on hard disks. At some point we had, I think, close to 500. I mean, I'm talking physical hard drives, you know, like 4 terabytes hard drives. And so when we started VX Intel in 2017, 2018, we spent, I think, like almost 3 years moving all that data to the cloud. And some of it's still there as like a backlog. And we're sort of slowly sort of ingesting everything into the main database. So it's a lot of stuff.
Wow. So kind of a follow-up question to what you were talking about earlier. You started looking at these, you know, programs, these viruses, you know, did you ever go get some formal education on top of your, you know, programming skills specifically for like malware reverse engineering or anything like that?
No, not at all. I'm actually like pretty much self-taught. I've also followed, I mean, as far as malware reversing, I'm very, very bad at it. I'm more interested in like, where do they come from? Who writes it? And especially if they exchange code, you know, how does it go from person A to B? Are they related? It's just this ecosystem more, you know, who runs it, who operates it, you know, that sort of thing. That fascinates me.
That's really impressive. I mean, I guess I want to take it back to the start. It's like, what did you start doing with the collection you were building? Like you know, you said you had no idea what the brain virus was doing. Is that how you started to land? Did you start to reverse all that stuff? Did you know, what took it from one virus to having this, you know, pipeline of a billion samples?
Well, you know, it's sort of late 80s, early 90s, like it's sort of like became more and more prevalent as well. Like you used to get like maybe a disc from a magazine and all of a sudden there was something on it, like major screen melt or whatever. And it was like, hang on, what's going on here? So it was becoming, I mean, at that time, it was like mostly joke viruses. So it was just like doing things on your screen or whatever. But it was like, you know, how does it like go from one disk to the next? Or how does it like come onto my system? And of course, then you started doing things like, you know, Dr. Solomon's AV toolkit and stuff like that. All the fun stuff.
That was a blast from the past, yeah.
Yeah, right. So playing, I mean, it was such a great time, you know, like new discoveries almost every day. You know, people discovering, you know, hidden commands on your operating systems, you know, on what you could do with DOS, you know, undocumented commands. And it was such fun time. And at that time, it was literally like keeping stuff on disk, cataloging it and going like, you know, oh, you have these like baseball cards. Well, I have these viruses. And people were like, so what, you know? And I thought I was great, you know, but you know, that's another story.
Yeah.
So you're sitting on this collection that's growing and growing. What was it that made you decide like, hey, we want to, you know, turn this into something or, you know, start a business? How did that transition happen?
Yeah, actually, I always joke because I always like say to people, like there was like this Hitchcockian story behind it. You know, I was on the Eurostar one day traveling from Brussels to London and literally like very serendipitous. I met this guy, like this like last train out to London. And we got, he was like sort of like doing stuff, drawing things. And so we got talking, you know, and sort of lo and behold, it turned out to be some sort of like hardware software engineer. This company actually in based in the Netherlands, they built this hardware filtering device for malware. And they were like literally like looking for malware to test their system against. They said, well, we tried to like approach various AV companies. They said, no, we don't give out this sort of stuff. Even like for testing like a bona fide like anti-malware system, they could not get like any malware to test their systems. I was like, hang on. I have this like, you know, set up like at that time, like don't laugh, 100,000 like, you know, unique samples. And maybe I can like do something with it. And they became our first customer, you know. So every month I was like sort of able to find 20,000 new viruses and like sort of sell it on like a subscription base, you know. At that time it was like a weekly update. Every month we used to just send out discs or like CDs to our subscribers with the new updates on it, and that's how it started. It's like literally. It's 100,000 is like we collect on an hourly rate now. So it's grown significantly since.
So how much can you share about the collection process? Like, is there a community where you're sharing samples? Obviously, I know that there's, you know, VirusTotal is one that springs to mind as a big repository of malware that's, you know, delivered by the community. But how does it work with you, if you can share some of that?
It's in behind the screens, it's actually somewhat similar to VirusTotal. We are part of this like big malware sharing ecosystem with all the AV vendors. And basically, I would say 99% of the AV vendors has a what they call like a malware share. Every day they make available X amount of samples that they've seen and they've collected to this collective share. And this is definitely something you build by like bumping into the right people at conferences saying, hey, you have a malware share, we can save, you know, share something back. And it's done on like who you know basis. You know, like if somebody off the street came and said, you know, I want to share samples with you, they're like, nah. I mean, I got introduced to it. You know, I was actually like, I was taken to a conference, I think it was a virus bulletin conference, and said, somebody said, you know, this is like a reliable person who has data to share. You can share samples with them. And that's how it started. And it's been growing since then. And since, you know, after that, it's building relationships. You know, after the AV companies come the anti-malware companies, then some researcher might say, hey, you know, I'd like to upload some samples to you. You know, are you interested? Sure, we'll take anything you've got, you know? And and literally it's like taking like almost 20 years to build this community. And, you know, it's definitely a big part of my day-to-day is to sort of nourish this community as well. You know, if something breaks or things don't work, or if you need, you know, sample A that somebody's looking for, you can ask, you know, and it's a nice thing.
There seems to be a lot of like the human element involved there. So are there any fun stories about beefs that you can discuss where, you know, maybe one vendor's like, I'll share it with you as long as you don't give it to vendor X or Y or Z or any of that kind of stuff?
No, it's actually, we're quite friendly. Obviously, I mean, no one shares the samples they can't share.
Sure, yeah.
And if you are in the circle of sharing, there is no, oh, you know, you can share with A, but you can't share with B. If it's out there, it's available to this group. It's a very small group. I think, you know, worst case, what happens is they might give you a sample. They might say, well, you can't share the sample at all with any of your customers. You can like extract data out of it, the metadata, whatever. You can share that, but the actual sample you can't for whatever reason.
Yeah, that makes sense. So like, obviously you've been in it for a long time and you've seen a lot of samples. What's the biggest shift you've seen? You know, I think of that in terms of, you know, from portable executables to lol bins in terms of adversary activity. But have you seen a big shift or a big, you know, evolution over your time as well?
I mean, if I look the last 25 years, I have to say personally, what used to be, in quote, a fun thing, like all new and exciting, turned into like a real bizarre, like ransomware plus, you know, also like ransomware plus data exfil as well. It's turned into like this business, but really malicious business, you know, like, you know, they ransomware you, they try to exfil data. If they can't exfil, they basically destroy your system just to get you back or whatever. And it's turned into this really nasty thing, which, I mean, that's a part of it I don't enjoy at all anymore. It's more a case of like, you know, can I grab a copy of their samples so we can analyze it in-house and like build detection. That's become like the number one priority now.
Yeah, so I was going to just ask a question on that. We really have seen the shift from, you know, there was kind of your hobbyists making, you know, like you talked about earlier, almost prank level viruses. And it seemed like it was that level of like, you know, individuals making this, even criminals. You had nation states involved, sure, but then there was this turn a number of years ago where there was the commoditization of malware, where you had, you know, different groups, you know, really specializing in different types of things and then selling those to each other. And I mean, there's even conferences for carters and things like that where they're sharing this. And I was curious, as you watched that, did this become, how did that change your business? And did it become sort of less fun? Like you were mentioning, it becomes just a little bit more.
It becomes like governed by money. And, you know, where I come from Turkey, that was also a big thing. Carders, skimmers. So they found out they can use their talents and build this big money-making machine around it. And unfortunately, it has come to just that, because these guys that do ransomware, you know, it's nothing political anymore. They're not trying to prove a point. And they even like, admit to it. It's become a money-making machine purely, and that's it. So for me, the fun side of it, from collecting all the like the fun viruses, Trojans, has turned into this crusade. I know it's a cat and mouse, you know, game most of the time. But you know, if you develop something new, I'm gonna try to find it and you know, basically you know, hand it out to our guys to build detections, you know, pure and simple.
That's a good lead into my next question. Is like we talked about the sample set and collection. Like, what's the actual operationalization of all of that stuff that you collect? Like, what is your team? What does your research team build from that massive corpus?
Well, basically, now they have the whole data throw available to them at any given point. If there is a new file, they can go out and see if they've seen something similar before, right? If there's any similarities, code similarities. And in some cases, they can see like, you know, something they've developed now as like something in it from maybe like 8 to 10 years before, because you know, like how in this business, the old becomes the new, like, you know, well,
goes around, comes around. Yeah.
Yeah. All of a sudden the newest systems stop detecting systems from like things from 10 years ago. So, hey, they grab that and build into this like new malware. And it's, you know, it does circumvent stuff. So I'm like, you know, it's good to have this like, you know, 15, 20 years like of backlog. You can basically look into, hey, you know, where is this coming from originally? So, yeah, I think it's a useful resource for our guys.
Yeah. I think, Adam, for you, if you think about running it as you step into your role as CISO for a moment, how would you go about consuming some of the threat indicators or the threat intel from a feed like Anthony was just discussing?
Well, yeah, actually, that's one thing I like to ask Anthony himself. But I have noticed, you know, putting my CISO hat on, that, you know, companies really have to get to a place where they can use the threat intel feeds that they get. I do talk to many leaders and know others where they have threat intel feeds and they just don't have much to, you know, they don't have anything set up to deal with it. Or they don't do it because they're like, I don't have time for that. I'm trying to just cover the vulnerabilities I know about. And, you know, I'm trying to set up a program or set up a SOC. And, you know, it's just, there's so much to do as a security leader. It's really hard to then also make time for this. But I was going to ask you, Anthony, what have you seen? So you talked about operationalizing this on your side. What about on the other side, your customers? What are some of the best practices or really impressive things you've seen at big companies, small companies, of how they use what you have to offer?
So we actually built VX Intel primarily for startups. There are people that's maybe 1 or 2, 3 man team who traditionally don't have the cash to go to a big service like VirusTotal. I mean, obviously, they everybody starts these days to use things like MalwareBazaar or VX Underground. These are great, you know, open source communities. But you know, if you have a business running and you have to have a steady inflow of malware, fresh malware, like every day, every hour, you know, open source systems go down sometimes or not available or stuff is not shared. So you know, our goal was to make something available 24/7 to the startups. And also like, you know, quite a few of our customers like are also VT customers or other big sort of like, you know, repositories, but they come to us because we have a lot of researchers like uploading stuff to us, companies or people that share but don't want to necessarily share with VirusTotal, right? Because they're so commercialized. They share with us. So if you're a VT customer, but also a VX Intel customer, you get like this overage of data. Sure, some of it is seen by VX, by VirusTotal, but we have also stuff that they don't see. So they have this like humongous like access to this like corpus every day. So we sort of like try to be this value add service, if anything, to every, you know, to all the small fry, so to speak.
Yeah, that's great. And that really is one thing that I've seen, to answer your question, Ian. This, you've got to start somewhere, and there's little things you can do and big things. You can find, you know, great services like VX Intel, and or you can even just set up like an RSS feed in a Slack channel. I mean, there's lots of things you can do to try to pull in extra information that can inform your security program and point you in the right direction. It's really important for you to understand, you know, how you operate, the environment you're operating in, and sort of the threat landscape that that represents. You know, it's very different for like a critical infrastructure, business, utility or something, as opposed to like a SaaS company, as opposed to, you know, maybe a title company or real estate. Like all of these different verticals are have very different needs. And so you can set up something specific to you. And just, I think the biggest thing is to not be intimidated by it and realize that you can bring this on. Conversely, the other thing I see is people, you know, turn on all the switches, turn on Intel feeds from maybe, you know, their firewall provider or something, but they don't have anything to operationalize it. Like, so it's just coming in and they're not doing anything with it. So I really do think it requires some thought. And if you do it carefully, it can really be a value add, like Anthony said, to what you're doing in your security program.
Yeah. Where would be the first place to start? I mean, I think it's fascinating that you mentioned, you know, just setting up an RSS feed that pumps to a Slack channel. I mean, when someone mentions threat intel, usually, you know, people are going to be like, oh, it's nerdy stuff like threat indicators, like Yara rules, but that's clearly not the case. So where would you start out today?
I just what I said, I think I would start out with, when you're operationalizing your team. So you're looking at your security operations. So think incident response, think SIM, whatever feeds that you have coming in that are telling you, they're giving you your visibility. So, you know, because basic security programs start with visibility. So now I can see the various things in my environment that I have, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Well, then you've got to overlay that with some sort of intel, right? Like you can have detections that are built, you can build your own detections, but then you need to be able to, you know, detect, is this something bad or not, right? Mm-hmm. And so figuring out how to do that. So is it a feed of IOCs that go right into my SIM or right into my firewall that will tell me what it is? Or is it something, you know, like a VirusTotal, VXIntel, where I can upload hashes or other artifacts to say, tell me what this is. Is it bad? And having something that's up to date is really important, because you could be one of the first companies seeing something that no one else has seen. I responded to a lot of incidents like that, where we go into a small mom pop shop, random motel in the middle of nowhere, and they are like one of the first ones that have ever seen this, you know, something on a phishing email or something like that. So, but as you're thinking about this as a company, I think it's really just walking through your operations and saying, okay, so we detected something. How do we determine what this attack is? Mm-hmm. What are our ways of doing that? We can analyze it ourselves, you know, and also your response to that, but we can analyze it ourselves. And, you know, looking for great solutions like VXIntel can be a way to do that, especially when you max out your free lookups at VirusTotal or something like that.
Yeah. I like the idea of this kind of like threat-informed defense approach that you describe in there. Like the other side of it, I'm thinking of, like, aside from consuming IOCs and feeds into systems or devices, you know, something like CISA's KEV list, right? Known exploited vulnerabilities, an RSS feed that just tells you when something's been added to that. And then you've got a, you know, fairly high priority task for one of your IT or your security teams to do to figure out, are we at risk of something like that?
Yeah, I love what Anthony's talking about this community, this close-knit community of sharing information. We need to do that better. Just worldwide, everybody, I'm just going to say it, blanket statement, we need to do that better. We need to share information with one another better. And we're getting better at it. CISA's doing great. Their known exploited vulnerabilities list that they're publishing is awesome. There's other groups like the Cyber Threat Alliance and things like that, where people are trying to set up groups of private organization, public organizations that are getting together and sharing more information with each other. So not just in the malware community, like Anthony described, but also, you know, just in the community, it could be with similar companies, could be with, you know, totally different businesses and organizations, but sharing the information of what we're seeing today. You know, I've tried to set up some of these sort of ad hoc in my communities, but it's something that we could do better. And that will help drive our threat-informed security programs and help us get, you know, on top of these things faster and have better reaction times to new things that are coming out.
Absolutely. Sharing is caring. I can't think of a better way to wrap up today's episode. Anthony, thanks so much for spending some time with us today. Like, it's been a pleasure to meet you, and really interesting to hear about your, what, I'm going to age you now, 40 year journey in malware, malware
much, collection. Yeah. It makes me feel old. Oh my God.
You're welcome. I'm happy to help. And Adam, as always, man, thanks for being here and joining in the conversation with me today. And thanks everyone for listening. Until next time, we'll be back with episode 5 in a short amount of time. So see you then.